I'm Georgie Crawford. This is the Gut Glow Podcast. Following a cancer diagnosis in my 30s, my goal is to inspire and empower people on their self-care journey. Through the conversations I have with my guests, we hope to do just that.
There is a plan, and believe that if you're at rock bottom and you're suffering, this is all part of your life, your tapestry. This is your story, and where you go next is what's crucial.
Although I went through a tough time, it showed me how someone could still love me at my lowest and at my weakest, because the love before was easy, but the love at my lowest was real.
So deep down, we all know what we want in life. We all know what makes us happy. We all know the life we dreamed about. And deep down, we all know what we're capable of if you only give yourself permission to do it.
I now live a healthy and fulfilled life where self-care is a top priority and every day is an opportunity to grow. This season of the Gut Glow Podcast is brought to you with thanks to Ireland's leading pharmacy chain, Lloyds Pharmacy. We're finally getting some sun and it's so important to keep our skin protected. Luckily, Lloyds Pharmacy's highly trained skin experts can provide the best SPF advice and tailored recommendations to suit you and your family. Visit lloydspharmacy.ie for all your sun care and skin care needs. Lloyds Pharmacy, say hello to the people that know. Hello, I hope you are well today. I am so excited for you to hear this podcast today. It was everything I needed to hear this week, and I hope you get a lot from it. So Emma Waldron is a former Miss Ireland who's since become founder and CEO of Wild, which is a platform that empowers creators to do what they love. Emma has relocated to the tech capital of the world after living in New York for 5 years. So she's now in San Francisco as she takes her tech company to the next level. She's backed by leaders from Google, Apple, and LionTree. This is an unbelievable story, and she tells me today how she doorstepped Araya Burkoff and how she got their backing. It's such a brilliant story. She speaks about how we should believe in ourselves and why we should never take no for an answer, how we should be working on ourselves every day to take ourselves to the next level in life. I know after I drove home from recording this podcast, I had such fire in my belly, so I can't wait for you to hear it. In other news in my life, the Gut Glow wellness program is going great. We got a gorgeous review during the week. It said, "This course was so much more than I expected. I thoroughly enjoyed it and found it so informative. At the end of each section, there's additional readings and TED Talk recommendations, which is great to go through in your own time. What I loved about this course is that you take it at your own pace and just pick up where you left off. So much food for thought and not complicated. It all makes so much sense." And that is really what we wanted to create with the Gut Glow Wellness Program, was those aha moments and just giving people basic information that could have such a big impact on their life. So you can check out more over on thegutglow.ie, where we have a special offer on at the moment. So let's get on with the podcast. I hope you enjoy it. Let me know what you think.
Emma, I am so thrilled to have you on the Gut Glow podcast today. Thank you so much for your time.
Oh no, I'm so glad to be here. I absolutely love the podcast. So thrilled to be asked to be part of it.
I'm so fascinated by your life, Emma, and I've been following you for a few months now and following your journey, and it's very inspiring. Where are you talking to us from today?
Thank you so much. That's so kind of you. I'm talking to you from San Francisco. I actually moved out here to the West Coast about 8 weeks ago now. So a newbie to California. I was in New York for about 5.5, 6 years beforehand. So yeah, really, really loving the move.
Yeah, because you've had an interesting journey. So you started out, you were Miss Ireland, then you went on to the Miss World competition, did really well with that. What was that experience like? I know speaking to Rosanna Davison, you know, it changed her life, and maybe the competition is different today to what it was back then. But what was your experience of it?
Yeah, Miss Ireland was such a wonderful experience for me. I learned a huge amount about myself and about the world. So I guess kind of the the catalyst for me doing it in the first place was that I felt that, you know, people like Rosanna had made such incredible kind of names for themselves. But I mean that in a way of like they'd created businesses and were role models for young girls. And I thought, well, this is like a fantastic opportunity to be part of something that, you know, if you manage it correctly, can really help you in many areas and aspects of your life and gives you optionality to, you know, enter into different career paths because you have built this, you know, kind of brand or reputation for yourself through the pageant. And so I always knew that I wanted to be in business, but I didn't know what I wanted to do exactly. And so I felt like Miss Ireland was a great way for me to be able to test that out and see what that was like. And so, you know, it was a very last minute decision. And, you know, I won and 9 days later I was in China at Miss World. And I think, you know, having not had a whole lot of time to actually prepare was really, really good. And so I've always been someone who really enjoys learning about different cultures and meeting different people. And so going there, I think it was the 60th anniversary of Miss World too. It was like the Diamond Tour. And we had people from countries that, you know, I had never even kind of been exposed to or hadn't traveled to and didn't know anything about the culture or customs. So just even from that perspective, it was extremely interesting. And also, you know, there were people from countries, you know, like Israel, Palestine, you know, whose countries were at war with each other, but were sitting beside one another at this competition, which was really beautiful to see. And yeah, so I really, really enjoyed the experience. I think it was very different to what I had actually imagined that it would be. I think that the perception of pageants and understandably is that it is, you know, exploiting women in some way, but actually going to Miss World and seeing a number of different women from countries that were, you know, impoverished and using this as an opportunity to actually alleviate themselves and their families out of poverty and give them a chance at a life they otherwise never would have been able to have was really kind of fascinating for me. And also, I think, you know, particularly with Miss World, you know, there's a huge emphasis on charity and, you know, the holistic person. So actually, even when I did it, which was a long time ago now, I'm getting old, you know, we didn't have a bikini section. So it was like, okay, we're aware that this is dated. You know, if you look at now, I think, you know, brands like Victoria's Secret are realizing that, you know, authenticity is important and we don't want to be shown these kind of, you know, unrealistically, you know, beautiful women, which are, you know, exist and that's wonderful. But I think, you know, even then 10, 11 years ago, Miss World was realizing that, hey, actually we need to start to be looking at the whole woman. And I think that I was lucky to be part of the competition then. I can't speak to when kind of Rosanna was involved in it or anyone else who was earlier than I, but I think I was just very lucky in that. So yeah, it was a great experience. I learned a lot then coming back to Ireland about, you know, working with different brands and companies. And it's actually how I started my kind of intro into tech. So my boyfriend at the time was a software developer and we built out a website and we were the first kind of fashion blog. Myself and my friend Mary used to take photos of me and we were the first fashion blog in Ireland. Like there was no, this was, you know, before Suzanne Jackson, who's built an incredible company for herself. You know, it was before everything like that. And so it was really amazing to actually to start to think about ways that you could look at yourself as a brand and use your following, use interest from the press and media and your relationships with brands in a way that could be creative in a sense that you're creating these your images, you've control over the content you're putting out there, you're building up an audience and a community. But then it was just such an interesting time and shift because you know, previously that wasn't something that people who had done Miss Ireland were really doing. And now obviously like Roz Purcell has this incredible blog and brand that she's built up as well. So it was a really interesting time, you know?
Yeah. And do you feel like almost that your blog was before its time?
No, I don't think it was before its time. I think that so in the States, there were a lot of other fashion bloggers who existed. I think it was just the first of its kind in Ireland.
Yeah.
I didn't really, you know, I wasn't really putting a huge amount of time or effort into it. I think it was just more kind of the first step of, I guess, my tech lifestyle. I moved kind of quickly away from it. And when I moved to the States, I didn't really continue to pursue it. It wasn't really my dream to be in the front of the camera. I really want to be in the behind, like building the platform versus like actually being the subject of the material. And so I learned that through it. I enjoyed taking the photographs, but really my kind of sweet spot is building and creating, not actually kind of creating the content itself necessarily. And so I think that, yeah, I think there's other incredible creators out there who do a way better job than I did, or, you know, so yeah.
So tell us then about the move to America. Did it, you know, were you thinking about that for a long time? What made you finally do it?
Yeah, it wasn't something I'd been thinking of for a very long time. I'm kind of quite a spontaneous person, and also similarly to moving to San Francisco. I felt that the market was bigger here to be able to create a platform. So originally I moved here to create like an aggregated influencer platform where you could transact, where you discover. So essentially like what Instagram shopping is today, but just for fashion influencers, because I felt like discovery was difficult. And so I decided about, you know, I think it was maybe like a week or something after I finished my HDIP and my teaching to move to the States and see what that was like. And, you know, I think I've always been someone who's very interested in travel and adventure. And so just thought, why not? And Ireland isn't going anywhere. I could always come back, and I love home. But I just thought, you know, I was ready for the next thing, and to experience a new culture and new people and see where that road took me.
That's so brilliant. And did you travel to America by yourself? Did you know anybody there?
So really funny story. I did not know a single soul there. I only knew the name of one street, Wall Street. So I sublet an apartment on Wall Street, I swear. I mean, when I look back now, I'm like, I don't even know how I survived and navigated it, but I did, and was very lucky to meet some great people along the way. And yeah, it's so interesting to think back then. And like, I was so poor. I mean, I had no money at all. And I was working, thankfully, in like, you know, some Irish bars, and I got modeling, and that was great. But, you know, in the beginning, I'm sure like many Irish people who go to the States, it was a very interesting and telling experience, but also one that I wouldn't trade for the world. You know, I think there's a lot of kind of conversations nowadays about grit and persistence and, you know, the importance of, I think, like coping strategies and coping mechanisms. And I think things that maybe, you know, we try to maybe protect our kids from a little bit more than we should. And then, you know, when you get into the real world, it's like, wow, there's like a lot of things that I need to be able to bounce back from. And I think that first year and many other events like since then, we're really trying and testing. And also then, you know, it's almost like, you know, with the video game, I don't know if you play video games, but like you get to the next level, it's like, okay, let me get through this maze. And then when you do it, you're like, okay, brilliant. You know, I've built up the responses to be able to deal with this. And then the next one comes, and like you respond more quickly, you have the skill set, you know how to deal with and cope with adversity. And I'm sure in your case as well, with all that you've been through, I can only imagine, you know, the coping strategies that you had to like look inside to try to find. And maybe, I don't know, do you have an experience that like previously you were able to tap into that you were like, okay, I've dealt with this kind of thing before, and this is what got me through?
Yeah, 100%, definitely. I mean, my husband had been diagnosed with MS in 2012, and nobody knew that. So he definitely helped me through, and his experience, and knowing that he wasn't in that dark hole forever and he found a way out of it. I was hopeful that that would happen for me too. So yeah, you're absolutely right in what you say. And when you moved to America, did you have a plan? Did you know what you wanted your future to be? You seem so educated. I mean, in your spare time, or what do you do?
So my plan when I moved here, I wanted to start that platform. And so I knew that I would have to learn a lot before I would be able to actually get to that point. So I actually, I taught myself data science. So I would print off machine learning papers and just read them. I would, you know, go onto websites. Stitch Fix is an incredible platform where it actually goes through and teaches you all the different components of how their algorithm works. And so, you know, that, or like, you know, going on reading blogs and, like I said, my machine learning papers. And then I also started working and interning at a tech company where I was like social media communications manager, you know, fifth person in the door, and just did it for basically peanuts, just to learn what it would be like to actually start a company, how that worked, how you know, one conducts themselves as like a CEO, who you hire, how you hire, what is the, you know, just everything about actually starting a business. And then just reading a lot of blogs from like Y Combinator, or watching videos just to try to actually figure out how the ecosystem works and what I need to do to be able to be successful at this. And so I think it was just a lot of time reading, a lot of time learning. And now I guess kind of how do I spend my spare time is kind of similar. I mean, I think during COVID, I spent a lot of time. And I think it was, I mean, COVID was so interesting in so many ways, obviously devastating to a lot of people. But I think one of the things and the benefits for me that came from it is that I was able to actually sit with myself. You know, I previously was very busy. I was modeling all the time. I was, you know, studying, I was trying to start this company. And so I felt like I was constantly being bombarded with different activities and events and things that I had to do, but I had very little time to actually kind of sit with myself and examine kind of like, what's my, you know, preferred way of spending time, and what kind of human am I? Like, you know, look at my source code and kind of figure out, you know, what makes me happy and brings me joy, and what should I be doing with my time? I think I was just kind of on this treadmill of just like constantly kind of doing the same thing, but without actually taking time to analyze like where it was getting me and, you know, whether my time being spent on these things was actually fruitful. And so at the beginning of COVID, I started to reflect and like examined those things. And so I actually realized a few interesting things. The first was that, you know, I had spent a lot of my time and my spare time in the evenings around people, and actually like, I think I'm more like an introvert extrovert, where I actually really enjoy spending time alone, reading and listening to podcasts and being by myself. So I've really switched. I mean, I know everybody has had to spend more time alone, but I think, you know, choicefully going forward, I will also be doing the same thing. I've loved, like, just, I read quite a lot. I listen to podcasts all the time. I wake up in the morning and I put a podcast on. I really love to learn. I think one of the things that when I was reflecting on my years before, you know, COVID, one of my favorite years, which probably is really unusual, was like my leaving cert year. I went to the Institute of Education and I was so happy. I felt like I was just in this like flow where I was just really stimulated and learning so much and just felt great. And I was like, how do I actually incorporate that back into my life again, where I feel like I'm, you know, learning things and having discussions with people that, you know, are really interesting to me. So yeah, I think that's a lot of the ways that I spend my time now. I do a lot of, I think part of why I moved to San Francisco was the winter in New York is pretty harsh. And so you can't really go outdoors, or you can't cycle, you can't really hike. And so San Francisco, while it's Northern California and not quite the LA like sunny summers, the weather is pretty moderate and you can go hiking or biking, or, you know, so I'm allowed to have a little bit more of an outdoorsy life as well here. So that's great.
So with COVID then, were you living alone through that time?
Yeah. I was living alone, myself and my dog in New York.
And would you have days and days where you wouldn't see anybody?
Oh yeah. There were months when I wouldn't see anyone. But again, what I realized is like, actually I'm okay with that, which is bizarre. I wonder, possibly, is it to do with, I don't know whether it's just like my makeup or whether it's having moved to America alone and not having family here and, you know, working a lot. So I had a friends, you know, circle who are amazing, but also being very much used to my own kind of relying on myself quite a lot. And also, you know, FaceTime was great. So I could like FaceTime my friends, I could FaceTime my family. And then I actually ended up meeting a really great crew of people in the building that I'd moved into. And so it was great to have them. But yeah, there were definitely prolonged periods of time when I didn't see anyone. But luckily, you know, I spend a lot of my time being busy with my business and building that out. And then also, you know, my spare time, I really enjoy reading and cooking and doing art and things. So I was able to have outlets that were that didn't feel like I was being restricted in a lot of ways, you know.
Fascinating. And so tell us about your business.
Yeah, sure. So I launched Wild at the start of this year. We are a creator-focused platform that empowers creators to do what they love. And so essentially what it is, it's a place where you can upload video content, podcast, and written content all in a single place. And then you can charge for that service. So you can have some free content out there, but it's also that there's so many creators who are putting so much effort like yourself into creating incredible content. And then you're relying on, you know, like ad sponsorship or brand sponsorship or affiliate revenue, instead of being able to actually monetize the content itself and charge a small amount for each listener, a subscriber. And so we realized that there's a way for the creators to actually own their audience as well. So someone like yourself, instead of, you know, I'm not sure where you kind of have your main audience, whether it's like iTunes or Spotify, but, you know, they own the audience. Whereas with Wild, you get 100% of your followers. So in other words, you have their emails, you're able to contact them, you can send them newsletters, you own 100% of your IP, and you can actually make money from the content you create versus trying to negotiate these like harder sponsorship deals or taking percentages of affiliate revenue, which is like a much harder way to like scale your company, and oftentimes results in people having to do kind of 2 and 3 jobs and their creative passion. This actually allows people to pursue their passion and you know, that be a viable career path for them.
Wow. Congratulations. It sounds amazing. It just sounds so incredible. And you're backed by some incredible people. I mean, you sent me the list of people who are backing you. And how does that come about?
So I have this approach to life, which is kind of nerdy, but I'm going to say it anyway. It comes from like finance and trading, where I call it like an optionality framework, where essentially it's where you have a behavior that's very like low effort but high impact. So, you know, with a lot of these people who are, you know, backers of Wild, it would be, you know, I would either find, so there's a great website that I will tell you all called Voila Norbert, and you can find anybody's email on that. And so using that, okay, also like LinkedIn, or, you know, just going. So I'll tell you kind of a funny story of like how I met one of our backers. So essentially, like, you know, I guess what that means and like why I was saying about the optionality framework is like it's such a low effort to actually send someone an email or a LinkedIn and be like, hey, have you got 5 minutes? Like, I'd love to get your thoughts on what I'm building, or like, hi, like, this is what I'm building, would love your feedback. Or, you know, you see somebody and you just, so like saying that takes no time at all, but the potential, you know, impact is they like your idea, they want to mentor you, they want to advise you, they want to invest in you, they get to know you, you get to build a relationship with them. And so that's like a hugely impactful thing on your life that really the effort to actually get to that point was very, very low. So it's something like that. It's like, okay, this is a really high impact, and I can, you know, reach out to them and ask them to be part of what we're building. And so sometimes the conversations go well, sometimes they don't respond, sometimes they ignore you, sometimes they're like, no, thanks. And like, that's also okay too. And so with Wild and some of the investors, like Ari Burkhoff, for example, who is the CEO and founder of Liontree. I had reached out to him on email. I found him on Voila Norbert. I reached out to him on LinkedIn, nothing. And so I turned up at his offices, were around the corner. This sounds really psychotic, but it worked. And so around the corner from where I was living at the time. And I went to the office, all kind of like dressed up, ready for a meeting, you know, and I told the secretary, I was like, I'm here to meet Ari, meeting scheduled. And obviously there was no meeting scheduled. And she was like, oh yeah, you know, I must have made a mistake. And, you know, really, because I think, you know, it's almost like, you know, this idea of kind of dress to impress. And, you know, people talk about that going onto flights and getting upgrades and things like that as well. I think that, you know, I looked like I was there for a meeting and that I wouldn't be making it up. And so she was like flustered a little bit. And anyway, I ended up sitting and talking to two of his analysts. She rescheduled me for a meeting. I met him in person. He thought this was really funny. And he was like, who are you and how did you get here? And so we got on so well.
So did you tell him what your plan was once you got in?
Yeah. I mean, I think he kind of figured it out because there was no kind of maybe traceability. He was like, or maybe he saw the email that I sent him. I'm not entirely sure. Anyway, so we ended up chatting for, you know, maybe an hour and a half, and we got on really, really well just as humans. And we've been friends for a really long time. We often kind of have like really great deep conversations. And then, you know, I suppose about six or eight months ago, he invested in Wild, and he's phenomenal. I mean, he is an investment bank called Liontree, which does a lot of the larger kind of mergers from like Viacom, CVS, et cetera. So his understanding on kind of domain expertise is, you know, next level. And so even just to have him as someone who I can confide in and talk to is incredible. So yeah, that's, I think a lot of the investors have been, you know, just being cheeky and asking and, you know, taking time and also not expecting things to happen in that instance and putting time and effort into the relationship and being, I guess, genuine about it too, where it's like, you know, even if he didn't want to invest, and that actually wasn't really the kind of purpose of the conversation. It was more just to meet him, get his thoughts on what it was we were building and see if there was some kind of interest on his end and what it was we were, and just to continue building the relationship that way. But sometimes you're not, you know, depending on whether you're actually like going out to fundraise, the conversations will be different. But that was more just, that would be a great person to have their thoughts on, you know, Wild as we scale and grow.
Oh, that's so inspiring. And sorry, I just missed what you said there. Do you recommend that people send the messages like, hey, can we meet for a coffee? Hey, can I pick your brain? Things like that.
Absolutely. Yeah. think so usually what I think helps and works is, you know, making it so that it's a very small ask of someone where it's like, have you 15 minutes for a Zoom? So something like that, where it's like, it's not going to be a huge, you know, a huge give on your end, because, you know, obviously you're very busy if you're this human, or, you know, and so it's like, have you 15 minutes for a call? And then here is what I would like from the conversation. In other words, I'd love to get your thoughts and advice on what I'm building. You know, you've written this great article about, you know, the creator economy. I'd love to, you know, hear your feedback, because you're so the reason why you're contacting them, I suppose. So not just kind of blanket reaching out to every single person, but like, specifically, I like your perspective on this thing. And, mm-hmm. you know, would you be okay to give me 15 minutes of your time for this purpose? And I think that's always kind of been helpful. But, you know, it doesn't always work. But I think, you know, another great phrase to live by is a closed mouth doesn't get fed. So may as well ask, you know.
That is so brilliant. I know there's going to be so many people listening to this podcast now who are going to say to themselves, do you know what, I'm going to send that email that I've always 100%. Wanted to send.
Oh my God, absolutely. Like, what's the worst thing that can happen is they don't respond. Well, at least, you know, and then by the way, try again. Respond, like message them again, just being bubbling this up to the top of your inbox. I know you're really busy. Would love to talk to you about this. You know, I sent Ari like messages on multiple different platforms and turned up to his office. It's like, if you really want something and someone, like, just absolutely go and do it, because no one is going to hand you that thing that you want. And what differentiates someone who's going to succeed from someone who's not going to is them putting in that extra effort. And instead of just giving up and being like, well, they obviously don't want to, you know, be part of it, it's like, no, like, hassle them until they tell you, stop emailing me, you know, like, and that's okay, you know, by the way, you know. So it's like, because who cares? I mean, at the end of the day, if someone is like, oh God, that person's really persistent. Yes, I'm really persistent. And yes, that's what's going to make me really successful, because I'm not going to stop emailing you until I get an answer from you, or whatever the thing is. I mean, there's obviously like a line between that and being really, really annoying, but people will let you know if they're not interested. You know, they'll be like, thank you so much for like reaching out. It's not a fit. Move on, next, you know. So I think definitely, like, there's no harm in asking.
And where did that belief in yourself come from?
So I grew up with two incredible, incredible parents. I'll give you an example of, you know, of that will really kind of show you what kind of upbringing I had. My parents were so supportive always of us. And I remember when I was like maybe 16, I got a report card home from school.
I'll get straight back to that conversation. First, I wanted to thank Lloyd's Pharmacy for supporting The Good Glow. Do you struggle to perfect your skincare routine? Find it hard to choose the best products to suit your skin? Well, you don't need to. Lloyd's Pharmacy offer one-to-one private consultations with their highly trained skin consultants who can advise the best routine and products to suit your skincare needs. Pop in and ask today. Many of their pharmacies are open late and on weekends. For a full list of services and latest mega deals, head over to lloydspharmacy.ie.
By the way, I'm so American, I said report cards. What do we call them in Ireland?
Oh God.
Report card, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it is.
Right. I don't know. I got my results in the post. And so I had a history teacher, Miss Barrett, who was absolutely brilliant. And I got maybe, I think it was like 95 or 98. So I got like an A1. And in the comment beside it was, could have done better in this. And I was like, excuse me? I got an A1. And I was fuming. I was so mad, because I was like, that was the one thing I'm really good at. You know, I'm really good at history. I really like Miss Barrett. And I really liked her too, which I feel like that makes it really worse, because when you get like criticism from like a teacher you just want praise from, is like, you know. So I went to my mom and I was like, Mom, I can't believe Miss Barrett said this thing. And she turned to me and she said, you got 95, but you're capable of 100. And so I was constantly being reinforced that I can achieve whatever I set my mind to. And, you know, even if I'm close to 100, you know, that's not that it's not good enough, but it's not good enough for you because you're capable of so much more. And then we also had this kind of, I mean, they created an infrastructure where it was like we had, you know, music and art and sports and books and, you know, constant support for our kind of development, which was really helpful because that then kind of transfers into like my adult life where it's like, that's how I spend my time and that's what I put my values into. And I think just verbally being told that you can do it and then that being supported with, and here's all the help that you need to be able to get to that point. And if you need more, like, let us know and we'll try to be there for you. And then, you know, so I think that was the environment I grew up in, which I'm so lucky and grateful for. And then I think then that is something that I then translate into my adult life where it's like, okay, you know, you can do this. And yes, it's hard. And oof, is it hard sometimes, you know?
Yeah.
But I think it's just like, it's just constantly. So I was reading something recently about how our brains are actually designed to be able to create the proteins to evolve into the next level, like the gaming kind of system where it's like, yes, this is really, really hard right now. However, you're learning the skills to be able to get you through whatever this is that you're doing or, you know, building or kind of whatever it is, so that you can grow to the next. Like we're basically like infinitely scalable. And we have this thing called like neuroplasticity, where it's like we can actually continue to be smarter and better and better and better and like continue to do that if we feed ourselves with the right things. And so even if something is hard, like knowing that your body is designed to actually get you through this helps to kind of get you through it. And like, it doesn't always go like in an upward, you know, trajectory. I think there's definitely some like loops in there when you go like up and you're like, oh, sugar. There's like a really solid down. And then you go up again and that momentum from the down gets you to the next one. And so I think instead of it just being like kind of like a mountain where it's like up and then it's down really low and it's up, I actually think it's more like a loop system where it's like that momentum from the down will actually propel you forward to the next high. You know,
And I think that's for even young people maybe listening to this, they might see successful people and think that it just went up, 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 up. And like you said, it's loops, it's ups and downs. You're going to fail along the way. You're going to fall, but to keep going.
Yeah. And I think absolutely. I think being open as well to learning about what it is that you need to do to be able to get to that next level, because So we just were fundraising, and that is such a hard process. And, you know, I'm like a non-traditional founder, meaning like I, you know, don't have a STEM background. I didn't go to an Ivy League here. I wasn't one of the, you know, people that came from Facebook or Uber or one of these top companies. And so not being in the ecosystem, a huge reason why I moved to San Francisco is to be closer to like the, you know, in geographical proximity to like the heart of tech where, you know, I can actually learn these things kind of almost by osmosis, just like soak it all in. But I think when you are that person and you're like, you know, raising money and you're trying to figure out, because there's a very specific language for all these things. And I'm sure it's the same with other, you know, aspects of life where it's like, you just need to, it's not always in a rule book and it's not, you know, always there for you, but you have to be open to be able to be like, okay, what is it that I can learn from this? What can I do better? What was the feedback that I got from this meeting or this person? Or who can I ask who's done something similar? I think those are things that are really, really helpful as well. When the thing is hard and you feel like you can't get to that next level, being able to look at yourself and be like, okay, well, where am I holding myself back? And what are the things that I can do? Like, I think of, you know, this, a really interesting podcast by a guy called Chris Wilkinson called Modern Wisdom. And he talks about looking at yourself like an athlete. You know, if you think about someone like Serena Williams goes every single day to the court and she trains herself and she looks at specific things. And she's like, how do I improve this thing so that I compete on that level in this sport? And if you're, you know, wanting to be like the best researcher, the best blogger, the best, you know, doctor, whatever it is that you're focused on, it's like, well, what are those skills that I need to be kind of honing in on and practicing every single day? And what do I need to be exposing myself to help me to get to that next level? Because it doesn't just happen, you know, it's like, you know, and so I think reassuring yourself is great, but also looking at yourself and being like, what are those things that I need to acquire? And what are the behaviors that I can do every day that like compound over time that can get me to this next level? You know, and maybe it's listening to a podcast, or maybe it's kind of reading this book or studying this thing, or maybe it's riding my bike or whatever, you know, maybe you need to have more of a balance. And maybe so it's different for every person. But I think reassuring yourself mixed with setting yourself up for the optimizing your ability to actually get to that point is also important.
Yeah, it's super advice. And what sort of feedback are you getting about your business?
Really interesting. So what are some of the things that we've learned? I mean, I think even so with fundraising, sometimes it's also just, you know, language and how you phrase things, and being able to, it's almost like being two people. So it's like, you know how Beyonce had like Sasha Fierce. Yeah. So Beyonce is actually a very shy person, but in order for her to actually be able to do her job, she needed to create this persona that was confident and larger than life and like owned the stage. And so for me, I feel like that was something that I learned. It was like, you have to be this person who is selling this dream and this business and this idea, because we're at seed stage. And so we really have a lot to go in terms of like scaling and growing the business. And then, you know, also the realities of running the business day to day too. So it's almost like two different personas. And I think that was very interesting to learn. Yeah, I've learned a huge amount about the actual kind of fundamentals of fundraising, which I feel like I didn't really know before, which has been really, really helpful.
The reception you're getting for Wilds, which you created, people are excited by it.
Yeah, they seem to be, which is really, really great, you know, because when we were fundraising before, it was quite a different story, and it was much, much harder. And not to say that this raise was easy at all, but people were much more receptive to the concept and the idea. And I think there's been like a huge Overton window shift where people actually see a number of different things, you know, where I think you know, there's a lot of articles published at the moment about creator economy and what we're building kind of in the creator go-to-market space, where kind of decentralization and taking people's power into their own hands, removing the gatekeepers, like, you know, on Instagram or YouTube, where it's like they own the audience, they take a huge cut of the profit, and giving it back to the creators and saying like, here you go, here's this kind of platform out of the box, you own 100% of your audience, you own 100% of your IP, and empowering people versus, so that's been a huge thing. And I think that's been like expedited because of like cryptocurrencies and NFTs and DAOs and things, which has been really exciting. And so I think that because of that, you know, in other industries, people are also looking at ways in which kind of decentralization will also impact, you know, creator industries. And if you look also at like a lot of the stats and data around millennial and Gen Z, and their employment choices, there's a huge rise in contract work. And so the kind of the idea of, you know, pursuing your career and your passion in one, yeah, is really interesting.
Yeah, it's definitely like the future. Yeah. And so tell us then about the move to San Francisco. You obviously spent a lot of COVID in New York. You've moved to San Francisco now. What was that transition like for you?
Great, really. I'm again, similar to how I moved to New York, a very spontaneous person. I was in Austin for 3 weeks. I actually got stuck there during the snowpocalypse, which was really interesting. I don't know if you guys heard about that in Ireland, but basically no. Texas froze over, which doesn't happen. I mean, Texas, you would kind of, you know, associate with very warm weather, and traditionally that's how it is. But I happened to be there during a really big snowstorm when the, you know, electricity power went out. And it wasn't, so in New York, we get snowstorms all the time. It wasn't such a big deal there. But in Texas, they're not equipped for that. So you don't have snow tires. They don't have, you know, trucks to plow. They don't have salt to put on the streets. So people's power went, their water went, their heat went for weeks, including our own. And so ended up being together with a bunch of like really wonderful people in one house. And a lot of them were people who had built businesses, were entrepreneurs or VCs. And I just felt like I learned so much just from those few days of being around these people and learning how they navigate their businesses and their lives. And then also kind of learning about the kind of larger institutional VCs and how they operate and how a lot of them won't invest in your company unless you're kind of like an outlier with like wild metrics and you've like an amazing background. Like I think being in San Francisco is one of the investment theses of these larger institutional venture capitalists. And so for me, I was like, well, if I've moved countries and left my family and friends and started this lifestyle, let me put myself in the position where I have the highest chances of success by being around people who've done something similar, which, you know, a lot of the pushback on San Francisco is quite often that it's quite homogeneous. So, by the way, sometimes when I'm saying words, I'm like the American way of saying it and the Irish way of saying it, I'm like, you know, homogenous. But anyway, so yeah, so I just thought, you know, I may as well be around that kind of environment where I'm learning from people who've done it. And, you know, I can just learn from them and be also possibly able to get funding from these larger VCs as well. So yeah, that was like the kind of impetus for the move.
And what's the difference? And you said, like, you know, you can hike, and in New York in the winter, you can't do much. How different is your life on the West Coast?
Yeah, I'm still settling in. I suppose it's still kind of COVID. So it's really hard to make a kind of definitive assumption. But I think it's definitely, so the weather is more stable. So it doesn't really fluctuate too much. You don't have the extreme heats of the summer or the colds of the winter. And there's a lot more parks. It reminds me a lot more of Ireland, actually. It's much more similar to Dublin, I would say, than New York is, because of, you know, the kind of moderate climate, although, you know, I know Irish weather, we have a lot of rain. But yeah, so you can go to parks, you can walk by the water, you can bike, which is really, really nice. There's not so many people as in New York, but it's still a city. So you still get the benefits of like having like nice restaurants and shops and, you know, that kind of buzz as well.
And you seem like, obviously, you're on a lot of the time. You've got an amazing brain. You're constantly learning. You're constantly on the go. How do you switch off?
or do you? Switching up? No. No. I mean, I think so. Art is great for me. I paint a lot. I bike and hike. But yeah, I guess those are the ways that I switch off. I FaceTime my family, my friends, and yeah.
Sometimes it's hard to believe in yourself. I get the impression that you believe in yourself.
Yeah. So there are definitely days when I question it, or I think, what am I doing? And like, why you, in the sense of like, what makes you think that other people are going to believe in this thing? But it's fleeting and momentary, because I think to get caught in that mindset is not helpful for anyone, you know. So I think catching myself going down into like some sort of like negative thought loop is really important. And then I think just setting yourself up in as many ways as possible for success, being like, well, you've put in the time, you're doing all you can, and like, you know, if for example it doesn't work, well, that's okay, and like, here's how you're gonna make sure that it works the next time. Or, you know, so I think blind self-belief can sometimes be misguided, but I think believing in yourself, because so it's like the other thing kind of that is interesting too, is like you have like a lifetime of kind of personal case studies where it's like, okay, like, you know, when I was 7, I asked my mom to get me like a Crayola gift set. And so I would make it and like go door to door selling it. And it's like, okay, you know, from a young age, you were doing this thing. And then, you know, maybe, you know, I studied data science, and I like guest lectured PhD students at NYU. It's like, you can do this thing. So it's like kind of reminding yourself of all the times when you have, because it is hard. And, you know, you often hear about, you know, people talking about entrepreneurship as it's very lonely, and you have the highs of highs and the lowest of lows. And so I think in those moments, well, you need to have self-belief. You need to have that backed with, and here's all the reasons why I am going to succeed. And here is, you know, all the ways in which I'm setting myself up for success. So I think those things coupled together helps you actually believe it, because I don't really believe in this kind of, you know, like the affirmations thing where it's like, I'm this thing, I'm that thing. But then you don't really on a deep level believe that. I think that that's just kind of fooling yourself. And so I think for me, it's like, I definitely have self-belief, because otherwise I wouldn't be able to survive a process like fundraising, where it's like you're getting so many no's and you're like, dude, why am I doing this? Why am I putting myself through this? I could just go and work somewhere else. But it's like, no, I really believe that I can do it. And then you kind of tap into, well, why is that? I guess with, you know, maybe your audience, if that's like something that they're lacking, it's like, well, asking yourself, being like, well, why don't I believe in myself? What are the things that I feel like I don't have that I need to get to this level? And can I acquire those skills, and how do I do that? And then also the phrase I use a lot of times in everything, whether it's like relationships or, you know, working with my team or thinking about myself and my kind of, you know, mental processes. I always ask myself the question, is it true? It's from Byron Katie, one of her kind of worksheets called, I think it's called Love Thy Neighbor or something like that. And so in other words, like we start to tell ourselves stories about situations, about people, about things. And I think very often we can actually get to the source of what it is we actually believe by saying, is that true? So I'm never going to make it as a founder. I'm, you know, all these things. We're like, is that true? And it's like, well, no. Okay. Is it going to be hard? Yes. What are the things that are going to be challenging? And like, how do I actually maybe make them less challenging or help to reduce? So even me moving to San Francisco is like a huge part of that. You know, being in New York means you're ruling out all these different like venture capital companies, and maybe you're not around as many people doing the same things. Like, is that a weakness or is that a strength? And if moving here makes you better at what it is you do, move. You know, so setting yourself up for success in those little choices or big choices like moving cities that you make. And people might disagree with that. And that's okay too. But it's like you have to think about those things for yourself as well.
Yeah. And when it comes to your business, do you need to work in a certain way for you to feel like you're getting the best out of every day? So like, do you write everything down, or what sort of techniques do you use?
Interesting question. So I think it's different on depending on the day. So I have like an overall life goal kind of chart that I have, and things that I want to be as a person and things I want to achieve as a person. And then I break those things down. And so, you know, I might look at my business and be like, okay, if I want to be here in 5 years time and I work backwards from that, what are all the things that need to be true in order for me to actually get to that point? And so I think that's really important, is like, you know, figuring out, well, what kind of human do you want to be? What kind of relationship do you want to have? What kind of, you know, mother, daughter, business, career, finances, all those things. And like, how do I actually get to that point? And so I write a lot of those things down in terms of like a day to day. So my calendar is pretty chock-a-blocked, and that really tends to dictate what my day is like. And then I have like a Notion, which is, I don't know if that's like a big thing in Ireland, but it's like a note. Actually, it's so much more than just a note-taking system, but you can use it as a note-taking system and like a planner and things like that too. So I write down things like that I need to do on a daily basis. But I think having overall kind of like goals and like metrics that you're kind of aiming towards, which I trace backwards from my larger goals, is kind of how I operate.
Yeah, that's so good. I love that. And so, you know, when you get up in the morning, do you feel, you know, motivated to take on every day? Is every day different? Where's your head at currently?
So it depends, really. So for the most part, I have a dog, so I wake up and have to walk her. And then so our development team is in Ukraine, so we have really early calls. So a lot of the time I kind of wake up, put in my headset, talk to Ukraine and walk my dog. So I don't have much time to think about things. But yeah, I think that definitely there are times maybe on the weekend or, you know, when, yeah, I think maybe when things are a little bit more quiet that I might feel, okay, you know, if it's been a tough week or a tough day, or I feel a little lonely, or maybe I miss my family or whatever the things are. Because it's like you're human too, right? And so it's like, you know, of course, you know, you're going to feel like down sometimes. And I think, you know, moving as well, I don't have much of like a social structure here or system and people. And so sometimes I'm like, oh, what am I going to do? But I think just like I just make myself busy, leaves less time. Because I think sometimes when I'm idle, that leaves more time for kind of those thoughts. But if you go, and I think also exercise is really helpful for that. So get out and like get those, you know, get those hormones going. It helps counter the negative thoughts. And I think one of the things that I've actually realized as well is like not snoozing, just like getting out when the alarm goes off, making the bed, getting about your day, like not overthinking it, just like deep breath and up you get. And some days are easier than others. And I think that's kind of sometimes maybe like an idealistic approach, but I think even if you're aware of it and you're like, okay, getting up and just doing the thing, even if it's hard, you know, so.
Oh, I love it. And just last question, I have to let you go now. I'm sure you've got lots of meetings to get to, but just for anyone listening who is feeling inspired after listening to this podcast today, what are your, you know, I'm sure you get asked all the time, what's your advice to younger people or people starting out on their journey? What would that be?
Great question. I think what's so nice about our kind of era is that we can try so many things and fail and that be okay. I think, you know, previously, like maybe our parents would have one job and that would be their job forever. I think what's really, really nice is that we can try out many different things and see what works for us and see what fits. I know people kind of just did the Leaving Cert in Ireland, and, you know, we put such a huge amount of pressure on that. But now we've got online courses that you can do, like Reforge or Maven. And, you know, even like Stanford has like these like executive training programs. And there's just so many ways, and like coding, you know, if I was to advise anyone to do anything, code. I don't code, but it helps. But, so I think that my advice would be not to put so much pressure on yourself that everything needs to be the right thing, that you can change your career path. You can change your, you know, the course of life. If you look at the last 10 years and how technology has evolved, like there's jobs and roles that didn't exist 10 years ago. And like, we have no idea where the next 10 years is going to bring us in terms of like, you know, technological advancement. And so I think that, you know, I think people just being kind to themselves and, you know, not putting too much pressure on themselves as young people. And I think then just finding out what it is that you care about and what makes you happy, and like really leaning into that and trying to figure out ways that, you know, and I think again, with the rise of the creator economy, that you can do things that are your passion, that can, you can make it into your career and how you go about doing that. But yeah, I think just being kind to yourself and realizing that, that the lows are only temporary, and that the, you know, the highs and the rest of life outweighs that, even though in the moment it might seem really, really hard.
Wow. This podcast, I've loved every second of it. I feel so inspired after listening to it, so motivated. Thank you so much. I'll have such a pep in my step now for the rest of the day.
Of course. Thank you so much. You're doing such an incredible job with the podcast. It's so, so fabulous.
No, you too. And I'm so excited for you and to follow your journey. And I have no doubt that you will be the greatest success. You already are, but congratulations on everything.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. You're so good.
Thanks for listening to the Good Glow podcast, with thanks to Lloyd's Pharmacy. If you enjoyed the podcast, please rate and review. It really makes a difference. And you can find the Good Glow wellness program over on thegoodglow.ie.